Oh, it's a beautiful sunny day, the perfect time to just cuddle up with a nice podcast. And what better podcast than the Comedy Advice Podcast with me, Stefan Sitani. Hey, everybody, I just wanted to be your server and describe the specials for today. The specials include a very wonderful man named Mark Jiggy Jagarjian. And Mark, if you guys haven't heard of Jiggy, he's an amazing comedian. He's been doing stand-up for a long time. He also is the opener for the Impractical Jokers and goes on tour with them. He's done the Impractical Jokers cruise. He's been on the Food Network. He's a cook. He's a chef. He cooks things. I don't know the esoteric terms for that since I just do Grubhub. But he's an amazing person. He has such an entrepreneurial spirit, and I'm so excited to deliver this episode to you. And in its delivery, when you open up the box, we'll dig deep into the life of Jiggy. Right now, things are a little tough with quarantine, but he's been able to be resourceful. He didn't like the Zoom shows, which I get that feedback from a lot of comedians. So he put a twist on it, where he has his virtual show Tastes Funny, and he makes it more interactive with the audience. There are sets of sabotages where he tries to cook something, but then challenges appear. So it's hilarious. Guys, I have the link in the show notes if you want to check that out. He also talks about what it's like to tour with the Impractical Jokers, and it's really cool to get some inside information about it. He also talks about one of his punishments that he had to endure on the show. Hilarious. So you'll hear a little bit about that. He also talks about what it was like performing at Madison Square Garden. From what it was like to hear about the news to what it was like being up on stage, and then when he got some direction to change things up while he was on stage and finishing his set. So that was really cool to hear. We also talked about his new film project, which he's really excited about. It's a horror comedy. You'll hear about it on the podcast. And then what I'm really excited about is the genius way that he's actually funding it. So on that point, he has a new album out. Yes, he's not just a comedian. He's not just a chef. He's also a musician. And he has this amazing album that nobody can be like, oh, I don't like that type of music, because it's ambient sleep music. It's amazing. I've listened to it. He has gently lulled me to sleep, and I can't tell you how many REM cycles that I've gone through thanks to The Snoozers. So if you guys want to check that out, it's on Spotify. There's a link to it in the show notes. Please support him in whatever way you can. This guy is fascinating, and it was such an honor to be able to speak with him. So we talk about that, then we get into the self-help, and then the icing on the cake, the Jokers call, so I get to say hello to them, and I hope you guys enjoy. This is an awesome episode, packed full of laughter, insight, self-help, everything that you could wish for in a self-help podcast. So I'm going to let you guys hear it, but before I do, the delivery boy wants a tip. If you guys are willing and able, I've got my Patreon page. You guys can go over there and support it. I have bonus content, early episode releases, ad-free content. It's all there for you to enjoy. And while you're enjoying, you're supporting me so that I can continue to get amazing guests like Jiggy. I can continue to improve sound quality. I can continue to just make this a better podcast so we can grow together. You guys are like my sugar daddies, and I'm your little sugar baby, and I need sugar to be able to make this podcast better. So money, please. Anyway, thank you guys. If you can't support, that's okay. I really appreciate you just listening. And things that you can do for free to support, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, leave a review on Stitcher if you're listening there. Tell your friends, tell other people, sing it on the streets, share it on social. Follow me on social at A Comedy Advice Podcast on Instagram. And if you guys have questions, continue to send those in. I love the InspireBot quotes that you guys are sending. Questions from Reddit, Quora, wherever. Love answering those with my guests. So I really appreciate it. All right, guys. I think it's time to start the show.
A Comedy Advice Podcast.
An advice podcast for Stefan
and friends
make exaggerated statements not meant to be taken literally.
What was that, Stefan?
Comedy Advice Podcast.
Thank you so much for joining, and welcome to A Comedy Advice Podcast. My name is Stefan Sitani, and I'm your host. Joining me today is a very special guest. I feel like I always say that. I need a better descriptor. He's a
very short guest. He's not very tall.
just mundane physical attributes.
He
has a mole on his shoulder. This gentleman hasn't been to the doctor in 2 years and his girlfriend's giving him crap. That's actually true.
Okay, so that's the second guest of that nature. No. So he's a stand-up comedian, podcaster, and musician, and a chef. He does basically everything here. He signed on to the Impractical Jokers tour as opening act and has been performing to sold-out theaters coast to coast for over 5 years, including performing for a sold-out Madison Square Garden. Oh, my God. I get pumped just reading that. Everybody, please, put your hands together for Mark Jiggy Jigarjian. Woo!
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me on. This is this should be fun. I'm coming in from New York City. So the old Wuhan of the United States, we've survived it.
Yeah, seriously. I think the new Wuhan, modern Wuhan, is now Arizona and Texas and Florida, I believe.
That's true.
It's just, but I like vintage classic Wuhan too. It seems like everything has started to, we were talking about it a little bit before we started, the streets are now being repopulated with haphazard built benches and patios, and dining is now back in business. So sounds horrifying and exciting at the
same time. We've gone back to like 1800s building codes where it's like, if you got the wood, you can do it. Anyone can do it. Handicap ramp. Who needs a handicap ramp? They're just building shit everywhere. It's, I don't even know what, there's definitely no building inspectors in work. I think they're all on unemployment as well.
Oh no.
But it is fun. It's fun eating on the street, and everyone's drinking on the street. It's lawless. It's the Wild West here in New York right now.
And you were saying, too, that you were one of the only ones of your friends that are still in New York. Everyone else has retreated.
A lot of people bailed. We got a lot of 40-year-olds moving back with their parents. Got a lot of people questioning their move to New York City in general, being like, I don't know, I'll stay in Allentown. You know, just people are just, it's just too expensive. When you take away working, it's amazing how expensive New York can be.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And speaking of working, I know that you're a comedian, and so there haven't been a lot of comedy shows besides Zoom and everything like that. I know that you've been putting up some really cool content on your Patreon page, including a podcast, A Comedian in Quarantine. But what are the ways that you have been staying active and continuing to grind in quarantine without the stand-up?
I was so resistant to doing these virtual shows. When quarantine first happened, I was like, I'm not doing anything virtual. I will wait to do it live. But during those times in March, I think everyone thought there's gonna be a 2 week break. It's a 2 week hiatus. You heard that from a lot of companies too. It's 2 weeks off and I can handle 2 weeks off. And then 2 weeks turned into a month. And then we're now, it's like, it feels like 500 years later. But I resisted all these virtual things because I was like, it's so different from what we do as standups. Especially, mm-hmm. You know, we thrive off of the live energy, and to think about doing something over Zoom, which I honestly had no idea what that even was,
was
a foreign idea. So I've been trying to like refine what a virtual show means to me, and to make it work and make it fun. So I've come up with a model of doing these pseudo cooking stand-up challenge shows. I don't know how else to describe it, but essentially I cook dishes while telling stories about my life, and the audience tries to sabotage me with a list of challenges like eating the world's hottest chocolate or shotgunning a beer or only using a butter knife or dressing up like an old lady or writing embarrassing tweets on my Twitter page. So just to make it like interactive, fun, and something different instead of something because I was on some Zoom shows where difficult to watch, never mind perform on, because people are still trying to figure out how it all worked. So my main goal was to make it something that was interactive, a little bit zany and a little bit different. And so that's what I've been doing. These virtual comedy sabotage cooking events.
I love that. And I have to say, I think you're right where it's Zoom shows are cringy a little bit for the performers and the listeners in some cases. You can't even communicate the laughter at a natural level or frequency. So it's just so tough to get that energy and the vibes that you would get from a live audience. And so I really like the twist that you've put on where you're cooking and telling a story and then challenges are just bam, 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 and making things really funny. An ingredient for laughter, I feel. But I was going to ask, is it on your Patreon that people can see this, or how can people view these? Are you still putting them on?
Yep. So I'm doing them at once every few weeks to kind of keep them fresh. All the tickets for the shows are free and I do them tip based. So I found that to be just a more fun interactive way to interact with the people who are watching, so they can tip for anything from a shout out to propose a challenge on the show. The tickets are free. They're at jiggycomedy.com/virtual events, or you can get there just by going to jiggycomedy.com. And the tickets are free and they're all done on Zoom. And we have a DJ pre and post show, and we unmute a certain amount of people to be our laugh track, which I think is important. I did some virtual nice. Shows where they were early on, and I still think folks are, including myself, trying to figure out the best way to replicate a live audience. Because even when you watch, you know, you watch late night TV, like guys who are like complete pros and legends like Colbert and Fallon, and their shows are like difficult to watch when you don't have anyone there.
Yeah.
Participating in the show. So I've been trying to like unmute certain people to kind of give a little bit more of a live feeling, but it seems like every time you pick someone to be unmuted, they're like, is it okay if I'm building a deck? And it's like, no, please don't be building a deck. Or like, they don't know how to control the volume. It's like they put their cat directly in the microphone. Yes. I've heard some really funny things like, grandma, I told you I'm on a Zoom event. It's like,
I accidentally did flash my wife's coworkers. I was going to the bathroom and I'm used to leaving the door open. My wife and I, that's the type of relationship we have. We go and we leave the door open. We communicate with each other. It helps us relax and helps us get in our state of zen. But I didn't, she was at her computer and I was sitting and doing a little tinker stinker. And then she started a video call with 8 people from her team. And I realized that there's a mirror that bounces and can see me. So I tried to kind of sneak and shut the door, but I heard somebody be like, is that your husband?
Oh, that's the worst.
And so as I shut the door, I heard just the most awkward conversation and my wife hanging up real quick.
So. My girlfriend's working from home, so I've developed a Spider-Man-like sense of all the angles in the apartment that I can't be seen over the last few months. But it's been more than one occasion that the first thing I'll hear in the morning is, I have a conference call. Don't do anything stupid.
Yes.
Which is true, because I probably would do something stupid. So I adhere to all warnings.
Yes, I would. And I have done something stupid. So I saw the next day, my wife completely shifted her desk station so that the camera faces the wall as the background.
That's a good smart move.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so you've been doing those shows. I did see one of the, I don't know if it was a recap for the show, where it looked like a lot of the jokers were on. There were some hijinks. I saw, was it you that shaved your head? You were eating a blend of some delicious food that was all just mixed together. It seems hilarious. So I can't wait to watch the next one. And for everybody else that's listening that wants to watch, I'm going to have a link in the show notes so you can just
That'd be great. Yeah, we try to add I've been trying to add like a challenge at the end of every show, which has been tough to top, but like the first show I shaved my head. I've waxed my legs. I did a makeup tutorial. I ate the world's hottest hot wings. I'm pretty much on a verge of death by the end of this quarantine. We need to get out. I really try to make it as fun as possible for people as a little bit of a escape and to do what I love to do, which is cook, tell stories, and do that comedy thing.
That's awesome. That's really cool. And it just, after watching you, hearing you in different places too, it's really cool to see your style and your types of humor and all of the different things that you're doing. And you fitting in with the Impractical Jokers too, where you've also got that challenge punishment type of thing. And I feel like you guys fit in really well. I saw the other day a video of where they punished you where you are an opener for them, and instead of you going out and telling jokes as the opener, they made you dance and not say a word to some silly song. I think it was Popcorn or something. And you danced like a pro, but the audience had no background. They had no idea what was going on. And it was just hilarious to watch. But I was going to ask, is that kind of a reflection of how it's like touring with the Jokers? Is it just constant prank after prank?
Or? The guys are, they've kind of been like big brothers to me, especially on the road. And so it kind of has that feeling of, you know, how you would treat like a little brother sometimes. And that, uh-huh. that example is a perfect example of that. Of the popcorn dance was, it's a 1970s instrumental, which gets stuck in your head, and it got stuck in our head during lunch. And so we're like backstage before the show, and they had given this instrumental to the sound guy, and they're like, Jig, we'll pay the same rate, but we wrote an intro for you, but we want you to just go out and dance and never acknowledge the fact that this is a joke. And so I go out, they put a 360-degree camera on the stage, and the audience, this was the first time that I had toured through, I think it was like Greensboro, or a small town in the South, small city in the South, and they had no clue what the hell I was doing. And after the show, no one was laughing besides them, by the way. It was like the audience was dead silent, arms crossed, arms folded. We did a meet and greet after the show, and no one's talking to me, clearly. I'm just standing in the corner. This one guy comes up to me, and he goes, "You're a hell of a mover." and I was like, "You don't know how much that means to me." But it was really fun. But I like the I like doing things that are a little bit different. Plus, like, you know, when you're on the road and you're touring and you're doing like a similar show for a run of shows, like to have something that's like a little highlight or a little thing to mix up the tour, you know, that's what makes mm-hmm. it fun.
Mm-hmm. That is so cool. And I also, when they were reading the intro, or when whomever was reading the intro, I was like, wait a second, was he in The Revenant with Leonardo DiCaprio?
Yeah,
so they... I was like, oh my God, should I be talking about this on the podcast? So I did a search. I didn't see anything. So I was like, okay,
they wrote like this like unbelievable intro. Like I was like Bob Hope. He's like, he's hosted The Tonight Show 43 times. You've seen him in The Revenant, which is only a bear and Leonardo DiCaprio. There's like no one else in The Revenant. So yeah, they wrote this like ridiculous intro and they sent me out there. But I was so happy that they recorded it, they filmed it, and yeah, it was a great moment.
That's amazing. And I have to turn on the compliment shower to talk about my guests, hopefully get them a little wet, but sprinkle you some compliments. I think that it takes balls to just go up and do stand-up. You're just constantly asking for approval through laughter every 15 seconds or so, but then to go up on stage for 2.5-3 minutes and just dance, nobody knows what's going on, people are starting, you can feel the tension in the air, like, what the hell is this guy doing?
It's horrible. And so when you do tour, like we've been touring, I've actually been touring with them a long time, since 2013 now. And so you have similar production crews from tour to tour. And I'd say 5 times a year, the sound guy will bring me out to the popcorn song. You know, so like they'll announce me at some like arena, wherever, and then I'll come out and they'll play the popcorn song just to get me going, to get a little laugh going. But yeah, it's fun. Those guys are great.
That is hilarious. And I know that you've also been able to do amazing things too with them. Like you performed at Madison Square Garden, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about that in a second. But before I do, I wanted to ask, how did you guys meet? I think I heard on a podcast that you guys met in Florida, right, at the Improv, I think, but I don't want to ruin the story, so I'll let you tell it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those entertainment stories. I don't know if you have a lot of folks who are trying to get into comedy who listen, but, you know, a lot, mm-hmm. when you get started in stand-up, you hear all the time, it's like, you know, you have to treat every show. You never know who's in the audience, which sounds like one of those blanket pieces of advice that you get, like, from the 1970s. Like, you never know who's in the crowd, kid. Go out there and give them your arm. The guy, like, ashes out a cigar. But I was doing a show at the Orlando Improv down in Florida, and their tour manager came in on a Sunday show, which is usually the lightest show of the week. And You know, he liked me, he liked what he saw, and he gave me a chance to open for them. And a lot of opening for another act, especially, you know, a bigger act, especially a group, is about how you like vibe with the group. You know, you could be a hilarious stand-up, but you won't get the gig to be their opener if you don't get along off stage, because so much of it is the hang, you know. And if you can't hang together, you know, you could be a brilliant comedian, but you're not going to get work for that certain artist. Some artists can't work together. So, you know, we clicked really well right away, and it's led to, you know, a series of things with TV shows, and I was in their movie. And so, you know, clicking off stage and being able to carry your time on stage, it's a marriage of the two things. It's not just being funny on stage. You have to kind of vibe together off stage, or else it won't work. So it was really more of that than anything else.
Right. That's amazing. That's so cool. It really is a testament. And I think there are a lot of listeners that are wanting to get into comedy, or some guests that we've had, they're local comedians as well as touring ones and ones like yourself. But I think that's a great message on just always perform like somebody important is watching, and always give it your all. Mm-hmm. You know, why half-ass it anyway? You know? So that's really cool. And then I also just wanted to bring it back to the Madison Square Garden sold out show. What was it like performing in front of thousands of people?
That was a really special night, and I didn't know it was happening. So they've done fan cruises now for years, and it was after one of their fan cruises, they sat me down, and this was like on a Monday, and the Madison Square Garden show was on like a Thursday. There was like 3 days, and they sat me down and they're like, "We wanted to let you know, you've been with us since the beginning, and we want you to open for us on Thursday night at Madison Square Garden." And like, it was kind of an emotional moment for me. I mean, that's like as a comic, it doesn't get any bigger than that. As far as a stage, it's sold out. It's so meaningful to them. We all live in New York. Damn. You know, so it's their night, you know, I'm just there. It's more of a sprinkle to me, you know, it's still their night, but to be able to share the stage with them and hopefully boost them up and make it so I can hand over the stage to a warm room to give that opportunity to me, it really meant a lot.
That's awesome. It would suck if they were like, "We want you to dance to the pop."
I would have done it. I would have done it. Trust me. I would have done anything. But it was.
So they ended up asking you not to do that and tell your jokes.
Yeah.
Instead,
so I had my time to do. And so it was actually a unique show in the sense that we had two openers. So it was myself and Colin Jost, who's on SNL. And usually it's just me, or we have a couple of openers now who like for different parts of the country. So it was me and Colin, and I went first, and our tour manager runs up to the front of the stage. I'm like, you know, I had this set down of exactly what I wanted to do. And I was psyching myself out, you know, down to the second. I knew what I was going to do. I did not want to screw up at MSG.
Yeah.
I'm like coming up to my closing bit, and the tour manager runs to the front of the stage and is like, he mimics with his hands. He's like, "Jiggy, you need to stretch." And I'm like, "What?" So I had to double my time on the fly, 16,000 people, biggest show of my life. And I had to wing it. Granted, I have plenty of material, but like I had it set down to the second, and I had to like kind of think in my head, what can go with this? Where can I end? Which is, it's really hard to do that. Because Colin was late. He was late coming from Saturday Night Live, and they have rehearsals on Thursday nights, I guess. And he was just like late, caught in traffic, trying to get across town. And so I had to kill time, you know, or like double my time on stage.
Oh my God. Oh, there are sandwich artists at Subway that get stressed out if you make a last minute decision to put tomatoes on your sub. So to stretch out your set, like double it. I'm sure that was incredibly stressful.
It was very stressful, but I got through it. I was very happy with my set, and it was great. What a great experience. And then later that year we did the Boston Garden, which I grew up in Boston. So that was like maybe equal, if not more. And that was like a night of a massive snowstorm. And it was the night of the AFC championship game. The Patriots were playing the Chiefs. So like the entire, the entire arena is like kind of, I can't believe they even show up considering that the Patriots are playing that night. It's like everyone risks their lives in a snowstorm. But that was that was a very meaningful show too. So, I mean, they've given me a lot of opportunities, and now it's my time to, you know, now it's on me to kind of pivot that into something of my own. And that's what, you know, I've been working on and continue to work on, is to take these opportunities and turn it into either my own television shows or own projects that I can, you know, work your way up the ladder, just like any other job. You know, comedy is like anything else. You work your way up and then you bring someone else up with you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'm glad there are people out here like you, Jiggy, because I feel like there are some people on the opposite end of the spectrum where it's like me. But it's really nice to hear that there are people out there that, you know, you recognize the people have helped you. And as you've continued, I think you've made amazing accomplishments in your career, and you're in a position where you can help other people out. I mean, even guesting on somebody's podcast or whatever, I think it's all really helpful, and you're just spreading the love in a time where people are spreading coronavirus. I think this is a better thing to spread.
Yeah, so. No, it's good. And I've seen a lot of that, and the comedy business has changed a lot over the years. And I think that there's more collaboration, and I think than ever in comedy. You know, back in the day, like before my time, but in the 80s and 90s, it was like everyone was on like their solo track, and it was kind of dog eat dog. But now it's, I see a lot more collaboration. And I think that's honestly a testament to podcasting, because everyone is in the space and wants people to guest, and kind of has that feeling of stepping back and being the question asker. You know what I mean? So all these comedians are kind of have to be curious as well, where it wasn't that long ago where it was just me. So I think podcasting has really helped the comedy landscape in a really, really healthy way. And I think it's going to make comedy thrive into the future.
That might have been the most insightful thing that's said on this podcast.
I don't want to.
But I think you're right. Whether one people are actually selfish or not selfish, I think they put themselves in the shoes of the other person through podcasting, where you do the research, you kind of see what the other person has done, and you're kind of living life through their shoes, and you get to be metaphorically in their shoes and understand how they think, how they do things. And I think it gives you another perspective and makes you a little more wholesome and a little less selfish.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've seen that. And also the club culture has changed a lot because of that too. Just how comics interact in the club setting, on the road, but in your home city too. It's a lot more collaborative. And I think that's also a testament to podcasting.
That's awesome, man. And you have done so many cool things. You're so talented with comedy, with stand-up, with cooking, being a chef. You are on Food Network. Mm-hmm. You're a musician. I mean, you do all this thing. You were in movies. I think I saw you in Primrose.
The Primrose, yeah. That was a film that I helped produce and direct, and one of those like passion project things. And we're working on some more film projects now, which I actually have a very interesting project that I'm working on to help fundraise for it, that we can talk about at some point. But yeah, I mean, I try to keep myself busy with different types of projects. You know, I love stand up, but I just love entertainment. I love making people, you know, feel good, and in any way that I can do it at any level. You know, so music, I love making music, comedy music. I thought at one point I was going to be a rapper, but that didn't work out for me.
Your videos are pretty good though, with the songs that you've been making. I saw the paper rolls, toilet rolls.
Oh yeah, that was my big quarantine smash hit. It was number 48,000 on the Billboard charts. I did a song called I Need a Roll, which was just like, honestly, we have so much time on our hands as comics sitting at home through this whole quarantine thing that you know, you come up with some ideas to do some things, throw them down, and I think this is the best time to experiment. So I've been trying to just experiment, try different things, venturing into, I feel like I'm the oldest person on TikTok trying that out. but yeah, I'm totally open to experimentation, trying new things. And that's what stand-up really is. The core of that is coming up with ideas and being experimental in stand-up as much as you can too. And that's how you grow and, hopefully make your act better and stronger over the years.
That's awesome. Do you ever feel like you're spreading yourself too thin, or are you...
Yeah, that's a great question.
Spreading yourself equally.
No, it's a really good question. And I talked to some of my friends who, you know, there's a lot of social media theories about how you can handle that, because, you know, they call it like the long tail theory. Is like, if you did one thing 1,000 times, like you might be better off. You know, if all you did was like, you know, there's people on TikTok is like, they just bounce ping pong balls into like solo cups and they have like 5 million followers, but they just do it every single day. So there is something to be said about keeping keeping whatever you're doing very linear and just pounding away at one certain thing. But, you know, not everything I do is to get recognition, and I like, you know, the things that I do, I really like to do. So, you know, if it works for me long-term or if it doesn't, you know, at the end of the day, you have to do stuff that makes you happy and creatively as well.
That's a beautiful answer. And I think I totally agree with it 100%, because if you're doing the same thing, I think you're going to introduce monotony that's going to start to seep in, and you're just going to get bored of what you're doing, even though you have 500 million followers on TikTok. But if you do things and follow your passions, I feel like that could lead you into great places. And then that's where it's going to start to connect, where I think as you start these things, they're forming different islands. But then as you keep getting better, those islands are going to rise and you're going to start to see some connecting ground.
That's very true. Yeah.
And I think that opportunities arise where, you know, you're entertaining, you're funny, and that could pull over into the acting or producing or cooking. I mean, cooking shows, a lot of comedians, this is a generalization, but I don't know how many comedians can actually cook or cook very well. So it's cool to see that you've kind of mixed those different things for your show, and it's hilarious. So I think from a humble podcaster, keep doing what you're doing, because I think it's very entertaining and it's very great.
Thank you. Yeah. And I hope some of the listeners can come out to some of these virtual shows, and I'm trying to make them as approachable as possible. So, you know, you don't have to pay anything. It's just, you know, you come have a good time. And my goal is to entertain while everyone's kind of, you know, can't go to the movies, can't do anything, can't go to the club. So, and God knows, we don't know how long that's going to be. That's the thing that's so scary. You know, it's like, God, I'm looking at like, who knows when I can like go do a live show again. And as much as I want to perform live, I know a lot of people, they're big comedy fans who want to just go and attend a show. And I'm one of them. You know, I like to go to stand-up shows. I enjoy it. So I think we're on the same boat there. And in the meantime, we just do the best we can. Make what we can.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. I wanted to talk, last thing, just talk about the project that you had mentioned.
Yeah.
I think it's The Revenant 2 with Leonardo DiCaprio.
That'd probably be a better paycheck. So I am working on a new film project. I'm very excited about it. So we started writing it this year before quarantine, but the film is a true story about a satanic cult in Fall River, Massachusetts in the 1980s during the Satanic Panic. So we have a... it's a comedy horror movie that takes place in the most haunted woods in America, the Freetown State Forest, outside of Fall River, Massachusetts. So we're writing the script, and we've been working on different, you know, ways to fundraise for the movie. You know, obviously we're going to be working and pitching it to different streaming services, but to get to the initial fundraising, this is where it's completely different. It might have been my best idea I've ever had. I don't know. I'm sharing it for the first time here, honestly.
Damn, wow. Well,
instead of doing traditional fundraising or crowdsourcing the movie, I am now officially an ambient sleep artist. So what is that? I make sleep sounds under my artist name is called The Snoozers. So if you go to Spotify, you can look up The Snoozers. I have a whole bunch of albums on there. One is out now. We have two coming out this week. And the whole thing is that we get about a half a cent per stream. And if you listen to these sleep albums and you put them on repeat and you go to sleep, you are contributing about $2 per night to the film project. So my goal is to have 1,000 people who sleep to this album a night. And the albums are great. So I put a lot of time into making sure these are dope ass sleep albums. So we have, the first one is like California beach sounds. We have thunderstorms. We're going to have whales. We have golf courses, campfires, all different types of stuff. So if you want to contribute to the film, all you have to do is just go to sleep to one of our albums. And it's on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, anything you listen to, but we're focusing on Spotify as our main base. And going to sleep to our album helps contribute to the film.
That is both fantastic and genius. And I'm going to listen to it tonight. I'm going to support you because I was before listening to Headspace and I'm getting sick of it. I don't know if you've ever heard it, but it's the same British voice all over again. So I've started listening to Sleep Sound. So I will listen to The Snoozers and I'll put a link to it in the show notes. So
please,
all
please,
of our
yeah.
listeners.
We'd love to have you listen. And in a day and age where everyone has an opinion on something, sleep music is almost unopinionable. So I wanted to make it like, I don't like hip hop music. I don't like rap music. I was thinking about different albums. I'm like, how could you possibly not listen to a beautiful sleep sounds? So I really put a lot of time and energy into make them sonically sound really soothing with a nice instrumental chord, piano chords, soothing waves and owl coos and all sorts of stuff. So right now, the first album is called California. Tomorrow, I believe we have Key West Thunderstorm and Vermont Campfire that's going to be dropping in Spotify. You talk about the most mundane plug of all time, sleep to my shit. Who's ready to snooze, baby? Let's go. Take a nap. Take a nap on my art.
The real genius is that you're making music to help people go to sleep to fund a project that's going to help people stay up at night because they're so scared.
Full circle.
At the end of the movie, you could be like, do you have trouble sleeping now? Go listen to The Snoozers. And then you get to fund something else.
There you
I
go.
Like it.
Full circle. Full so circle. Hopefully people can get on board. Check it out tonight. Deep
That's
sleep.
Amazing.
Deep sleep.
That's amazing. REM cycles guaranteed. I love it. Awesome. Well, thank you, Jiggy. We're going to get into the self-help portion of the podcast. But before we do, is there anything else that you wanted to plug, talk about? There's another plug section at the end, but if you've got anything on the top of your mind that you want to plug, feel free.
No, number one thing, The Snoozers on Spotify. That's what 100% of my efforts are going into this, The Snoozers. I want to be the bad boys of sleep. Come at me, bro. There's never been a face to a sleep album until The Snoozers took over the game. They say if you snooze, you lose, but we've never lost, baby. The Snoozers. Well,
when you snooze, we win. The Snoozers.
Yeah, check out The Snoozers on Spotify. That's my only plug. I'll do it again at the end.
That's awesome. Okay, very cool. That's genius. All right, we're going to let that ruminate while we get into an inspirational quote to help us answer these questions. Now, Before we get into the inspirational quote, I usually like to ask my guests if they have any inspirational quotes that mean something to them that help them get through their dark days, especially in quarantine or anything like that.
The most meaningful inspirational quote I have is actually my signature line too in my emails. Something my dad said is only do the extraordinary and absolutely impossible. And I think about that a lot.
Damn. That's badass. I like that. Jiggy, you are just a fountain of inspiration and good things. I'm so glad I got to talk with you. This is, and it's not even over yet. I'm enjoying it while it's here, but that's an awesome quote. And your dad said that.
Yeah, that's my dad's quote. So I think about that quite a bit, especially when I'm like, man, should I dive into the world of ambient sleep sounds? Yes. The answer is yes.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I always think about that because, it just makes you want to do more. There's always something that that can be done. And there's too many people who tell you you can't do something. So I think anything can be done. You just got to put the time in.
That's great. And I think you're a living example of that too. Through everything that I've seen you do, from your podcast to your comedy to your sleep albums to your movies, it's just amazing. So that's a great quote. We got to hit a real high with that one. We're going to hit a real low with this one. This quote, I like to get quotes not from people, but from robots. And this one is from a specific robot meant to inspire called InspiroBot. Mm. And so what it does is it uses AI to take some of the wisest words known to man and just slap them together for a really inspirational quote, or so it seems. So we're going to try and figure out what it means, this one. This week, InspiroBot says, don't think of it as a prison. Think of it as a lesson. And that's all. So I started, when I first heard it, I was thinking of quarantine. So I thought, okay, right now I'm stuck in my house. I feels like a prison because I can't go out. I can't do anything. But, you know, if you think about it, it could be a lesson for, like you just said a while ago, taking the opportunity to be able to do things, get creative, put a spin on some, if you don't like the Zoom shows, you put a spin on it, make your own show. Or, you know, learn to do arts and crafts. Build a patio that's better than the patios that are out there in New York.
Definitely.
Make a sleep album. Like, do something with your life. So don't think of it as a prison. Think of it as a think tank. And you will thrive. So I started to think of it like that.
I think that's pretty spot on. I was thinking about the literal interpretation. If you are a murderer, you know, don't think of this as a prison. Learn a fucking lesson from it. Don't kill anymore. Stop doing it.
I like that too. You hear that, Bob? No more murdering, please.
No more
You're
murdering.
In 25 to life. Think of this as a very long lesson.
Very
it's
long
like
lesson.
A 25-year timeout.
Think beyond the bars. What can you actually learn from this bricked place? I don't even know if that's a real word.
It sounds very Oscar Wilde.
It does. It sounds like it's some old English. Look beyond this bricked place.
Beyond the bricked walls lay the babbling brook. And
lessons learned from my bricked days.
The Bricked Wickeds. That could be a prison band if there was ever one.
It sounds like a 50s band. Something from like the Jersey Boys would sing.
Like the Yellow Jackets or something. We're here to teach you a lesson, Shay. Oh, that went too far back. That was like 40s.
That's probably maybe 40s.
Yeah.
The continental, right. What was it? The continental accent? You know that?
Yes. Transcontinental.
Transcontinental
or
accent.
Like that?
Kids used to learn that transcontinental accent. To speak like that, like high society used to speak in that wow, like whiny. It's like kind of like a whiny, twangy,
yeah,
British thing.
Very excited about things, usually, right? Like, hey, Margaret, where's my pot roast? Say, well, I keep putting the C in there, but
the
it's
C,
not,
I think that's more
that's
specific,
more like mobster,
mobsterish.
Yeah,
but same idea.
It's because my grandparents came here from Italy, so they started the mob life, and then the accent just rose through. I speak English and transcontinental mobster, so it's the mix. But you're right. I mean, what makes me interested about that, too, is that was only 60 years ago. So if you go 60 years behind that, I think I watched – my wife is Brazilian, so on July 4th, we decided to watch a patriotic movie to teach her about history. So we watched Mel Gibson's The Patriot.
Mm.
And the way they were speaking, I was thinking, should they be speaking in a British accent? Should they
speak
in a more... So I didn't know. I was confused and I was just wondering how they would speak.
It's actually pretty funny if you picture them speaking in modern day Boston accents. That's like the way I'd like to imagine them speaking. I think there's someone coming down the... Paul, are you going to get on your horse? What are you doing? Get out of Dunkin'.
Get this tea out of the fucking harbor. What are you doing?
Oh, look at this fucking guy. Send Tom Brady down there. He'll fix him.
Tom Brady the first.
Tom Brady the first. Yeah, I like to think of them as just having straight up Boston accents that started back then. It does make that whole time period sound very fun.
I like that. I'm going to stick that in my mind too. I love it. All right, this is great. I feel like we're now good and inspired for our questions that are up and coming. So we nailed that quote. We've got our first question. It's from Reddit, and it's found by our fan, Sam. Thank you, Sam. This one says, I'm starting off selling foot pics and not sure how to go about pricing. I just started to be committed to sell foot pictures. Since I always just made jokes about doing this, I never thought about how much to reasonably price them. I saw some go for $5 a piece, but I know there are other people that sell them for maybe $50 or heck, $200.
What's Help? A foot pic?
I think it's just a picture of your foot.
Oh, I thought it was like something you jam in your foot. or like a... Like a...
I bumped the mic.
I completely have to, you have to reread that now, knowing it's like, it's someone taking a picture of, I was thinking it was a device. Like he was trying to start a business.
Oh, see, that's where your tasteful entrepreneurial mind goes.
Okay, so, well, reread or give me the highlights again. So he wants to take pictures of his feet and sell them online. This is like a fetish thing.
Yes, I believe
that totally changes the way I hear it. I thought this was more like a Shark Tank type of situation.
Well, you know what? We can do both. We can go both salacious and innocent.
All right. So the guy, give me the highlights again. So the guy wants to sell foot pics. He's thinking about $50 or $200. Where's he?
Yeah,
selling?
Yeah. He doesn't know his price market? Range. He doesn't know his. Yeah, good question. I think find out your market. See who's interested. Maybe send out a survey for people that don't care about being anonymous and be like, can you answer a couple questions for me? I'll send you one free foot pic. Mm-hmm. And then you can get your market research and find out a reasonable price that people would be willing
to pay. I have a lot of questions about this. First of all, does he have a nice foot? Let's get down to the business here. Does he have a nice foot or not? He doesn't give any detail on that. If he says, I have this bomb-ass foot, and I'm trying to get my foot out to the world, that's my first question. What's his foot look like? Give me a 1 to 10 before I can give you an answer of what the pricing should be. Do you have a bomb foot? Maybe $200 is great if you got a bomb-ass foot. The next question is, what's the production value of these pics? Are you sending bare pics, naked feet? Are you dressing them up? Are you putting them costumes on it? You could probably fit like Barbie-sized dresses on your feet and have a lot of fun with that. You know, you dressing it up? Is it fun? Fun and games? Costume feet? What's the production value?
That's an excellent question. You could do some role play. You can put a pilot's shoe in there, a firefighter shoe, mm-hmm. maybe a boot, an explorer. Revolutionary War, Bostonian. I think you could do a lot of things, and then that could up your value.
That could totally up the value. So I need to know. I need to know where he stands. I mean, if you're just sending, you know, just a bare pick of an average foot, depends on his age too. You got a bomb ass foot, and you're like, you know, what's your age bracket? You got a bomb ass foot in like your 40s. Maybe that could be a higher value because they're more rare. It's just like diamonds.
It's like wine.
It's a fine wine. It gets better with age, but they're rare, harder to find. So I think before we can actually give him any proper advice, I mean, I have so many more questions. I could have probably an hour podcast on what he's trying to do. I'd say base rate for like a solid foot pick, run of the mill, no production value. I think $20 or less. Unless you have an extraordinary foot.
And what would characterize an extraordinary foot? I'm not into the foot game, so I think maybe no wrinkles, no hairs.
I think hairs have to be well kept, well combed. It has to have a degree
little braids in some of the toe hairs.
Braids. You got to have a certain degree of suppleness. no discoloration on the toenails. The normal stuff you look at and when you're rating feet.
That's true.
So
that's
these are true. All just very common thing. Have these feet been taken care of, or what type of savagery has gone on with these feet?
Are you willing to do a personalized message painted on the toenails? Like, see, hello, that's like, Bob. That's,
yeah, that could be, that could totally up the price. Customization always ups the price.
Then you could do something like a Patreon where
you could have a great, you can have or cameos. Tears. You could have a cameo page where the foot talks, you know, gives birthday messages.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Or the foot talks to you. It's like personified.
Oh my God.
And then you start like the foot cameo page where the foot dresses up in different outfits and wishes happy birthday to your friends and family. We're talking a multi-million dollar business here.
Oh shit. Genius. Wow. I feel like
business ideas got some. I think we got some.
Jiggy, I like how your mind works. I feel like we probably answered the shit out of this question.
Yes, we milked it. We milked it as far as we could go.
That's awesome. All right, we're going to go to the next question. This is also from Reddit. It's from our fan Will that found this one. It says, closing on my first home, should I wear a tux? Closing on my first home, it's next week. People are telling me I should wear a tux because the agents will also wear formal attire. But I don't have a tux, and I'm not sure if I can rent one in time for next Thursday. Is it okay if I wear a suit instead? And this is from Property Tuxes.
So, I mean, this clearly going extra formal for a closing is just too much fun for me not to support. Because I think that this is the funniest thing I would ever see if you showed up in a closing. I think that would actually be stepbrothers-esque if you show up in a closing in a tuxedo, because people don't go to, I mean, I think that is a joke, right? People don't go to closings in tuxedos.
Depends on the region in the Southwest, like Arizona.
No, they don't. I don't think anyone's ever worn a tuxedo to a closing. But go ahead. You're telling me in Arizona it's 500 million degrees and someone's putting on their tails to go to a friggin' closing on a mobile home?
Well, I know a tux is ridiculous, but we do an Arizona tux where it's actually shorts instead of pants. So it's
okay.
We adapt to the weather, but my wife and I actually just closed on a house and we didn't. I think we just wore formal. No, not even formal. We just wore clothes and.
You know
the
what?
Person gave us the key.
You know what I'll tell you is actually the number one thing that's worn in closings in this mind that I can tell you. I can almost visualize every closing in America that's happening right now. In 2020, I'd say 63% of people, of gentlemen, wear polo shirts to closings. I'm talking a golf shirt. It's got a, you know, short sleeve polo. It's got to be in the 63 to 68 percentile of men, including. Not the lawyers. The lawyers wear at least a jacket, but the other parties involved, it's a polo shirt game. It's a perfect attire for a closing. It's semi-casual, but very functional.
If my wife let me wear polos, I probably would have too. But
a lot of girls are anti-polo. A lot of girls are anti-polo.
I don't understand it. I feel like it's so easy to just put on, and it's the collar just says, hey, I purposefully did this for you. Like I came here with purpose and I'm putting in an effort.
Why are girls anti-polo?
My wife says I look like an old man. She says grandpas wear polos.
See, I don't know if I fully agree with that. I was a golfer, you know, I played golf in high school, and so I've worn a polo time or two.
Yeah,
a nice polo.
If my wife is listening, I definitely agree with that, but I don't agree with that. I used to love polos. And now I don't wear them. Now I wear t-shirts that have puns on them. Who's your data? And now I wear button-ups. But it's weird. I never used to wear short-sleeve button-ups until I moved to Arizona. And
short-sleeve button-up is like, that's like an IT guy.
It doesn't. No lawyer would wear a short-sleeve button-up, you can't, right?
A short-sleeve button-up, I actually have like, I don't think I've ever worn a short sleeve button up.
Right.
I can't even think of like a situation to wear it, because then are you throwing like a t-shirt underneath and you like open it up? Like, you know, like you open up all the buttons and you have a t-shirt underneath type of situation, or are you just button it all up, and it's just letting it fly. It just happens to have no sleeves on it.
I button it all the way up. I put on a little bow tie. It's very hipster looking, but
wear a bow
tie
with it?
No, I don't.
God. I was gonna say like, he has problems.
I gotta go.
She has problems with the polo, but you're walking around with like a wooden bow tie and a unicycle in Arizona.
That's how I went to close my home. So, no, I do it just with one button down, or the first and maybe second button unbuttoned. It is weird to get used to, but after living in Arizona, I feel like. I see so many people doing it, but I feel like everybody's sense of style here is a little shittier, to put it softly, than New York.
I don't think anyone's looking at like Flagstaff as the fashion capital of North America.
Yeah, correct. They can barely breathe because the oxygen levels are so low. But yeah, anyway, so a tux might be too over the top.
I actually disagree. I actually think a tux is great. If this person is dead serious in the question, which I doubt that they are, but even if they have a little bit, I think if they're trying to be funny, it is funny. And I think that this is a brilliant move. And even if you had to go rent a tux and it cost you $50 for the day, I would 100% support this endeavor to wear a tuxedo to the closing. I think it's very memorable. It's endearing and it's fucking hilarious. I think that whoever this person did will 100% do it. If he thought that I was going to be like, think that this is funny. This is true. This is as funny as it gets.
And if you think about it, I'm going to be a little serious here. how much are you spending on your house versus how much are you spending on all the other occasions where you're wearing a tux, right? Prom, what are you spending there if you're doing dinner, if you're paying for your girlfriend?
Maybe $100, $200.
Yeah, you're not spending $400,000.
Right.
I feel like you should wear more than a tux.
Well,
wear
and
two
also,
tuxes.
And then go to like a great steakhouse or something after in your tux. I love idea. I think it's great. I think people should do this more.
Yeah, there should be a party. Oh, I guess there's housewarming. But there should be like, I got the keys to my fucking house.
And everyone has to wear tuxedos.
There you go. Yep. Even the girls. Everybody.
Everyone has to do it.
I like it.
But Will, get a tuxedo. Take a picture. Send it in. I think it's a great idea. I really love it. I think it's funny.
That's splendid. I love it. All right. Awesome. We have reached the end of our podcast. Jiggy, thank you so much for joining. It was a real pleasure to have you. I wanted to ask you, where can people find you? What have you got going on? I know you plugged the sleep easies. The snoozers.
Man, I go ahead and I spend tireless nights coming up with the most catchy name for it. It sounded like medicine. I don't even know what you said. The sleepies.
That sounds like an adult telling a child what this medicine is going to do.
The sleepies.
To knock them out. It's just a sleepies, dear.
I make all my socials pretty easy. So everything across the board is at Jiggy Comedy, just like Getting Jiggy With It, JIGGY Comedy. So Instagram, Instagram and Twitter, I'm the most active. But you know, if you really want to support either me or you like what you hear, definitely pick up a new sleep routine and listen to the snoozers to go to bed on repeat. You would be helping me more than you know, and I hope that I can help you go to sleep. I have a tireless perfectionist when it comes to these sleep albums, and I'm really making them so that you can go to sleep and sleep well. So go to the snoozers on Spotify, listen to it on repeat, tell a friend. And I hope it's just like a cool, weird little thing that you can be a part of with us as we make this movie project. Because I think that it's going to be very notable. We're going to make the movie off of people going to sleep, and that's going to be our hook for the movie too.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I hope you are getting in touch with press to talk about this, because I think it's absolutely genius. Where's Mark Cuban? Can we get him on the
Let's
phone?
Go. Come on. Support the sleep album. We'll be getting the word out there. This is actually the first we talked about. The album just dropped this past weekend. So it's brand new. Everything is brand new. And we're going to be putting out at least an album or two every couple weeks until we flush out every friggin' sleep idea. So you can come. We could be the catch-all for all your sleep needs. If you're into friggin' whale sounds to thunderstorms, waves, rain, cityscapes, you name it. We're doing a Twilight Golf one I'm working on right now. You talk about engineering like little golf swings and crickets and like walking on wet grass. I mean, I'm trying everything.
That's awesome. Can people make suggestions first?
I'd love to hear suggestions. Yeah, I kind of have been reaching out just to close friends to see like what people sleep to as our core base of albums. But yeah, I mean, if someone wants to send me a direct message on Instagram or Twitter, I'm open to all suggestions for what calms you down to go to sleep, because that's what we want to aim for. We want to have stuff that's really relaxing, and then you can go to bed knowing that you're also helping independent film too.
That's awesome. That's so cool. I've heard anecdotally that people sometimes, if they're raised or they grow up in the city, that they're used to those sounds too. So maybe, do you have rural and urban sleep sounds as
it's,
well?
It's really interesting.
People are getting shot and
people in New York City, like and myself included, I can't sleep if it's too quiet. So we do want to do like an urban night album of some sort of, you know, you hear like taxis honking lightly in the background and light traffic. To some, including myself, that's like very soothing and helps me go to sleep. If I was like in the middle of the country or the middle of Montana, I would want to listen to that because I need to hear my trucks. I got to hear my trucks.
Right.
Where's my honking taxis? but there are some people like that. I don't think it's not going to be in our top five albums because a lot of people would be annoyed by hearing like cityscape sounds.
Sure.
But there are people like myself who either grew up or have a nostalgia for that to going to sleep to that like city, that city noise.
That's amazing. Do you think that there would ever be a necessity to do a live, or the need, the desire for a live concert where everyone could just BYOS, bring your own sleeping bag, and then you just go down and you relax, fall asleep?
So we've actually, my partner and I in this project have already, because on Spotify, there's like a distinct section where you can promote tour events. So, you know, a fantasy would be if, you know, we get like a bunch of people listening to this to go do live shows and screenings of the movie where we could like play our sleep sounds and then screen the film. So there's a lot of things that we can try to do, but I actually think that's a really funny idea to have live ambient sleep concerts. Be like, that concert awesome. Sucks. I fell right asleep. Exactly.
Five stars.
Okay. The concert's 8 hours long. Like an overnight show. But yeah. That's so awesome. I hope people can listen to The Snoozers on Spotify.
Awesome. The Snoozers. And all of that that Jiggy mentioned, it's going to be in the show notes. So you can just click and follow him, or click and support the podcast, or the podcast, the Snoozers. Well, that's the podcast, everybody. Thank you very much. And we will talk at you next week.
Oh, James Murray's actually hit me up. You want to say hi? Hold on.
Holy shit. Really?
He's probably going to give me shit because he wanted me to go to dinner tonight. Hello. I'm doing a podcast.
You're doing a podcast, but you can put me on the podcast. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Everybody, it's Marksman Flexo Joe. This is pulling Jiggy out of his bullshit for not being here at his manager's / best friend's dinner party. All right, go back to your podcast. Nobody, we miss you. We love you. The limo will be there in about a half hour.
You guys have fun. I'll talk to you soon, man. Love you. See ya.